This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In Vienna today, Gregory Schulte, the chief U.S. delegate to the International Atomic Energy Agency, the United Nations nuclear watchdog, said that the next decision needs to be taken not in Vienna, but in Tehran. Last week, the United States agreed to enter talks with Iran as part of a package of incentives put forward by all five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, plus Germany, if Iran will verifiably suspend enrichment of nuclear fuel. At a news conference today, Iran's representative responded positively to parts of that deal, said his country is willing to negotiate on others, but gave no indication that it's ready to budge on uranium enrichment, which he described as an obvious right. Still, Iran has yet to issue a formal response to last week's offer. The Bush administration says it's willing to wait weeks, though not months, and says the matter will go before the UN Security Council if Iran says no. We'll bring you an update on the tactics and look at some of the underlying issues. Is Iran's goal nuclear weapons? And if so, what for? Later in the program, an argument that Europe's social policies are going to start looking a lot more like America's. But first, Iran's nuclear ambitions. If you have questions on the latest twists in this dangerous game, join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. We spoke with Khusra Naji, a correspondent for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation in Tehran, after Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice offered the historic deal. He joins again, now that we have a much better idea of the details of the carrots inside this package, and it's nice to speak with you again.
Thank you very much.
When last we spoke, you said this has not been drawing a lot of attention in Iran. Has that changed?
I think so. A lot of people are waiting to see what's inside the package. The details have not been made public here. But of course, Iranian officials have been talking about it. We had the visit of Javier Solana, the foreign policy chief of the European Union, here to personally hand over this package of proposals to Iran. So that has been the headline here of many newspapers. And in fact, we had some Iranian papers and websites publishing what they think is the package. And in fact, the source of that is an American television network, which apparently put some document on their website, and the Iranian media picked it up as details of this package. I've been talking to diplomats here who have seen the actual package, although they're not saying what's in it. I've been told that what has been published either in the US or in Iran about the details of this package is not quite correct.
So we remain to be quite clear on what the details are, yet as far as we can tell, again, on the speculation of what's inside this package, it is there are certainly things that would attract Iranian interest.
Well, it looks like it. The initial reaction from Iran was pretty positive, in fact, surprisingly positive. We had the head of the National Security Council here, who's basically the architect of foreign policy here and the issue of the nuclear issues. He said, after receiving this package of proposals, he said that there were positive points in the package, and he also said there were ambiguous points in it that needed to be clarified, and he expressed hope that there will be more talks about to clarify these issues before they can agree or reject the big talk with the 5+1 countries.
The stumbling block would seem to be the issue of uranium enrichment and reprocessing of nuclear fuel. As we said earlier, Iran's delegate to the IAEA said today that is an obvious right. Is Iran likely to be willing, if the deal is right, to suspend enrichment of uranium if the prospect is down the road, way down the road maybe, but down the road, that Iran would get this right later on?
We simply don't know. The rhetoric of the Iranian leaders here for the moment is that they will not budge an inch on what they regard as Iran's legitimate right to enrichment for peaceful purposes. And they've been saying that, repeating that time and again. But since this package of proposals have been given to the Iranians, Iranian officials that have been facing journalists, like we had the Iranian foreign minister and before before him, we had the spokesman for the foreign ministry here, and they were directly asked whether Iran was prepared to suspend enrichment for the duration of the talks, at least. And their answer is very ambiguous. There's no clear-cut answer to that. Obviously, Iranian officials and Iranian leaders are thinking about that to see whether they could somehow agree to an enrichment for a limited period so that they can begin these talks, and maybe they receive some of the incentives in the proposal.
And I guess the other issue, as last we spoke, it seemed like this offer was not sweet enough for Iran to do anything but reject it out of hand. At this point, though, does it seem the diplomatic ball is in Iran's court? The next response is going to have to come from the Tehran government.
That's right. And the ball is in the Iranian court, and that Iranian officials say they are considering the package of proposals and they will respond to it. They're not saying when. And we had one of the Iranian officials, senior officials, the other day saying that there is no deadline for Iran to respond, A, and B, there's no punishment apparently put in these proposals that have been put forward to the Iranians. So Iranians are considering it, and I suppose we should expect some kind of a response soon. Having said all that, we also had the Iranian foreign minister saying that Iran may decide to put together a package of its own to put forward as a counter proposal. So talks about talks are going to happen, and in the next couple of weeks, I suppose, we're going to see more of that, more of talking about talks between Iran and particularly the European Union, who are representing the 5+1. Maybe Mr. Solana will again visit Iran to make that clear, or make some points of the proposal clear to the Iranians.
The 5+1, the members of the permanent members of the Security Council, plus Germany, which has been involved in these talks as well. Khosra Naji, thank you very much for staying up to speak with us. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Khosra Naji is a correspondent for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, joining us from his home in Tehran. With us here in Studio 3A in Washington is Joe Cirincione. He's director of nonproliferation at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Nice to have you back on the program, Joe.
A pleasure to be with you, Neil. Actually, I've changed jobs since the last time I was here. I'm now vice president for national security at the Center for American Progress.
Well, congratulations on the promotion,
thank
and
you.
We'll take note of that. Just getting back to what do we understand in terms of the details of this offer? Again, details have not been made public, but what we've seen is not just the U.S. joining talks, but offers of U.S. and European nuclear technology for Iran. Regional talks on security, including nuclear issues, yes, but other issues as well. And the idea being that there are economic incentives, trade incentives from the Europeans as well. This a serious proposal to Iran that they do have to think about.
Absolutely. This is the most comprehensive, complete proposal that Iran has had to deal with since the beginning of these kinds of talks almost 3 years ago today. It includes not just the European carrots, which are very attractive and of great interest to the Iranian business community, but also the potential for security guarantees, the idea that this could lead to a diplomatic recognition by the United States, an end of hostile relations. That was not present in the previous talks. It's there. Plus, possibly access to European and Western nuclear technology, which is better than the technology they're getting from Russia right now. That's of great interest to the nuclear bureaucracy in Iran. There's something to appeal to almost everyone here. I think that's why the Iranians are treating this so seriously. I think the correspondent from Tehran put his finger on it exactly. We're now having talks about the talks, whereas we like to think of this as fairly straightforward. Here's this beautiful proposal. The ball is in your court. Tell us what you think about it. The Iranians come back and they say, well, you know, I think that ball needs a little more air, or it's not exactly the shape we were looking for. Can you give us another ball that looks like this but it's a little bit better? Mm. They want to negotiate out an improvement in the deal even before they actually start negotiations. That's what we're seeing now.
The proposal, though, in broad terms, is designed to smoke the Iranians out. Are you really interested
yes.
in negotiating an agreement with us and that will give you nuclear power? Or is your goal really nuclear weapons?
I think that's exactly right. And there are some in this administration, some in the other countries as well, who think that the Iranians actually don't want to negotiate. There are some in Tehran who don't want to negotiate. If I had to guess, I would say President Ahmadinejad is not interested in negotiations. This conflict works well for him. It he allows him to pose as the warrior president defending the country from this foreign threat, and it allows him to accomplish what he really cares about, the consolidation of his domestic agenda. His domestic political influence has grown because of this. For exactly that reason, there are elements in Tehran who want to negotiate. They want to take this issue away from Ahmadinejad. They understand that it's worked well for him, and there are some in the business community, even in the clerical ruling elite as well, who believe that it's time for Iran to break and break out of its international isolation and make some kind of deal. And what they're now looking at is how good a deal can we get? How high a price can we squeeze out of this group?
And just before we go to the break, a squeeze out of this group, it is being presented as a unified position, but I think it's well understood that within those six countries, even the permanent five members of the Security Council plus Germany, there are divisions that Iran can say, well, maybe we could keep on uranium enriching just a little bit, and would that be okay?
Yes.
And some of those countries might be willing to go along with that.
I think that is. There are two issues here. What's the ultimate deal? Is there any enrichment at all that Iran could do? And I think there's actually movement there. I think it is possible. But right now, do we really have to suspend before the talks? The Iranians are probing to see if that's a real hard, fast rule.
I mean, worries they're just spinning out for time while they develop nuclear weapons.
Right. And President Ahmadinejad is visiting China later this week. He'll be probing there. If China holds firm, if they're convinced that this 5+1 group really is serious, you have to suspend before we talk, I think you'll see an Iranian suspension of a limited duration.
We're talking about the U.S.-led offer to Iran to stop its uranium enrichment in return for a package of incentives. Will Iran talk? And what are its real aims? We're taking your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Cunnan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Cohn in Washington. Last week, the U.S. and other members of the Security Council, along with Germany, offered Iran a package of incentives if it will stop uranium enrichment. Thus far, Iran has yet to make a formal response. In a few minutes, we'll talk with Parsi, an Iranian and Middle East specialist. Our guest right now is Joe Cirincione of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And, of course, you're invited to join us if you have questions about the latest twists in this convoluted and dangerous game. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. We'll begin with Jerry. Jerry's calling us from Newark in New Jersey.
Newark, New York.
Oh, Newark, New York. I saw New York, and I just assumed it was New Jersey, and somebody had made a mistake. I apologize.
I've been confused about what Iran is doing, which is actually illegal. I had heard before that uranium enrichment was considered okay under the terms of the treaty to which Iran's a signatory, but that the motivations were suspect. We think motivated to make nuclear weapons. Iran saying they're motivated to make nuclear power. So if you could clear up my confusion, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, Joe Cirincione, the Non-Proliferation Treaty does allow signatories to enrich uranium.
Absolutely. If you were to look at what Iran is doing right now and assume that all they're doing is what we could see, everything they're doing is legal. The treaty allows you to build nuclear reactors. It allows you to build factories to make the fuel for those nuclear reactors. That's the uranium enrichment process. All that's legal. There are two problems. One is this, as you mentioned, suspicion about their motives. Normally, a country does not make their own fuel. It's way too expensive to do that. You have to have 20 reactors to make this economically viable. Iran doesn't even have one reactor operating yet they're rushing ahead to build the fuel. And the reason you're suspicious is because those same facilities that can enrich uranium for fuel could be used to enrich uranium for bombs. So you're suspect. The illegalities come in the fact that Iran hid most of this uranium enrichment work for over almost 20 years now, and there's a series of violations of their treaty obligations. They should have disclosed that they were importing this material. They should have disclosed that they were beginning to do experiments that involved nuclear materials and centrifuges. There's 14 specific instances where they should have reported this and they didn't. Obviously, this is serious because the purpose of the reporting is to give other countries a heads up that a country is moving in this direction. Those are the violations that Iran is being held accountable for now.
And just today, Mohammed El-Baradei, the head of the IAEA and, of course, recent Nobel Peace Prize winner, said that he's unable to issue verification of what exactly Iran is doing, still unable after all this time.
And that's because Iran is not fully cooperating with the inspectors. There are facilities they want to see. There are documents that they have to read. There's stories that are still not told. I believe that Iran, in fact, was involved in some weapons-related research in the past, and that's what they're trying to hide. That's why they're not coming out completely and telling their story. I don't think they have a nuclear bomb program now, like the way Iraq did or Israel did, a crash program to build a bomb as quick as possible. I think they're trying to acquire the technology legally and openly now so that they can be in a position to develop a nuclear weapon 5 or 10 years hence, should they decide to do so.
Jerry, good question. Thanks very much.
That's a great answer, and it's scary because it rings the same thing that we went to war on Iraq, the hiding of the evidence, the hiding of the motives, and so I appreciate the answer.
Okay. Of course, all the answers in this question seem to be murky. Joining us now is Trita Parsi. He's an Iranian and a Middle East specialist. His forthcoming book is called Treacherous Triangle, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the United States. It's nice to have you here in studio.
Thank you for having me.
Is it your belief that Iran is after a nuclear weapon?
I think what the Iranians are doing, much like what Joe said, is that they're going for a capability. They're not weaponizing right now. I don't think they have that as an aim, but they want to be able to do so if they face an imminent threat. And part of the reason why the Iranians are not just rushing towards a weapon, and this is important for us to understand in Washington because sometimes we're making too many assumptions, is because of the fact that Iran within the region is one of the largest and most powerful states. It has a natural conventional superiority vis-a-vis many of its neighbors. If it were to weaponize and it would kick off, spark a nuclear arms race in the region, many of the smaller states would also go for a nuclear weapon. And then suddenly, Iran would find itself at a strategic parity with small countries like Bahrain, whereas right now it has a superiority vis-a-vis them. Mm-hmm. The Iranians are well aware of this, and they're very careful not to make that mistake.
Bahrain is, I guess, a potential threat down the road. Perhaps Saudi Arabia working with Egyptian technology is what some people are worried about as well. Nevertheless, Iran right now has nuclear neighbors on one side, Pakistan and India, on the other side, Israel.
Sure. But the Iranians have deterrence capabilities against almost all of those countries. The one country the Iranians lack a deterrence capability against is the United States. And when we're looking at nuclear proliferation, we have to also take into consideration the demand side of it. What is it that causes nations to demand a nuclear deterrence? Right now, in the case of Iran, it is because of the animosity between the United States and Iran. That is the primary driving force of their program. If we can do something, and I think the Bush administration is starting to go on the right track here, to reduce that animosity, much of that demand can also be eliminated.
Mm-hmm. As you look at the negotiations, and these are, as Joe was saying, as our correspondent in Iran was saying, still talks about talks thus far. But are they headed down the right track, do you think?
Well, talks about talks is, at the end of the day, still a step forward.
That's right.
Because in the past, we didn't even have that. As agreeable as the precondition set has been for the United States to join the talk, there is a risk with that, and that is that preconditions beget preconditions. Thus far, the Iranians have not set any preconditions, but we shouldn't do anything to invite them to do so.
Yet some of the preconditions that the United States has set will make it difficult for the Iranians to agree. And if they do not agree, the United States says the next step is to go to the Security Council. We've had one caller already mention the parallels to Iraq. This would be initially just sanctions on some of the individuals involved or believed to be involved in Iran's nuclear weapons program or Iran's nuclear program. Nevertheless, the Chinese and the Russians have made it clear that what their concern is, these are incremental. If there's no response to that, then the next step ratchets up, ratchets up, ratchets up.
What I think the big question mark in Tehran is right now is to see, is this new initiative from the United States a strategic initiative, or is it a tactical initiative? Is the United States strategically involved in this to be able to find a diplomatic solution, or is this a tactical maneuver to make it easier to go to the Security Council? And that's a question mark that is also being pondered upon in Europe. It's not just the people in Iran that are trying to figure that one out. Mm-hmm. So what's in the proposal is going to be really the thing that will determine how the Iranians react. Will they react to this as if it is a strategic maneuver, or if it's tactical?
Let me just say, one of the ways that the Iranians might test this is that they'll come back with a precondition of their own, and that will be that that while they're negotiating, this docket be removed from the Security Council agenda and sent back to the IAEA. For them, that keeps them a step away from sanctions, and it's a way of testing the true U.S. motives. I think the U.S. doesn't want to do that, and it's going to resist that. And you'll see that as a potential major obstacle in the weeks ahead.
Let's get to Dana. Dana's calling us from Cape Cod in Massachusetts.
Oh,
hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Hi. Yes, I have a question. I've heard of this. There's this Israeli analyst who is cited by Noam Chomsky, who is saying that, and he's from Israel, and he says that he wishes, if Iraq is indeed pursuing weapons-grade material, he wishes they wouldn't personally, but he says he's crazy if they don't, given that they're in a tough neighborhood. They got Iran here and Israel over here, Pakistan over here,
mm-hmm.
and the United States. So he said it would probably, you know, and only be for defensive purposes, not that he would fully approve of it personally, but he said he's crazy if they don't do it. And his name is Martin, I think it's Van Cravel or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that name ring a bell, or does that idea ring a bell to either of your guests?
The name is not familiar to me. The idea is familiar to me. And Joe Serencioni, I think it was Ehud Olmert, the Israeli prime minister, who said today, a nuclear weapon, Iran, is unacceptable to Israel.
Well, of course, the Israelis are going to say that, partially to get the U.S. to take stronger action. The Israelis are always trying to, you know, convince us that we have to do this, or else they'll do it themselves, and we don't want that, so we better act. I don't know how real that Israeli rhetoric is. But to the caller's question, there's a lot of people around the world who are very sympathetic to the idea that, of course, Iran is going to want to get a nuclear weapon. The lesson they draw from the Iraq War is that if you don't have a nuclear weapon, the U.S. is going to come after you. They have explicitly said this. They look at North Korea and they say, look, North Korea had nuclear weapons. North Korea wasn't attacked. India has nuclear weapons, and they've been accepted now as an ally of the United States, or offered a special sweetheart nuclear deal. The lesson they say is we have to get a weapon as quickly as possible, and if we just stay firm with their course, eventually the U.S. will back down.
If I could also add something to that, the thinking that the caller referred to does exist in Israel. It's within a small number of people, but they're somewhat growing, and their thinking basically is that as long as there isn't parity between Israel and Iran, Israel will be trapped in a situation in which it will try to find an absolute victory, a complete victory. But if there is parity, then both states will be forced to increase their communications in order to define red lines. And they say that that could actually be a positive thing. Now, again, they're not saying that they wish the Iranians to have a bomb, but their thinking is deterrence worked in the Cold War. It may actually work better in the Middle East than the current situation.
Mm-hmm. Dana, thanks very much for the call. Two questions quickly about that, Trita Parsi, and that is, parity. It would take a long time for Iran to develop parity with Israel, which is believed to have hundreds of nuclear weapons, i.e. a second strike capability. Iran would take a long time before it had that kind of capability. And B, you mentioned before, Iran's neighbors, the Gulf states, Turkey, Russia, the United States is not only in Iraq but in Afghanistan, Pakistan, it's going to have repercussions throughout the region.
Absolutely. But when it comes to strategic parity, you don't necessarily have to have 100 if the other side has 100. I mean, mm-hmm. these are really, really horrific weapons. You just need a couple of perhaps even one. What the Israelis have signaled to Iran and done so quite clearly is that Israel does have a second strike capability. Whatever Iran does to Israel, Israel will always be able to strike back. And that's a strong deterrence. The Iranians are not suicidal. This regime, even though it appears very irrational, would not have been able to survive in this region for 26 years with so few international friends, so unpopular at home, if they were suicidal.
We're talking with Trita Parsi, Iranian and Middle East specialist and author of the upcoming book, Treacherous Triangle, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the United States, and with Joe Cirincione, who's a Senior Vice President for National Security and International Affairs at the Center for American Progress. And we thank him for being with us. You're listening to Talk of the Nation. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org, and this is NPR News. We've been talking a lot about capabilities of Iran, and right now let's go to the question of intent. Joining us is Ethan Bronner, a deputy foreign editor for the New York Times, who's looked into various possible meanings of what Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said when he said, quote, that Israel should be wiped off the map. And Ethan Bronner joins us now by phone from New York City. Thanks very much for being with us on the program today.
My pleasure, Neil.
There is a dispute over the translation of these remarks.
There has been a dispute. I don't want to say that I've definitively set it to rest, but I spent a bunch of time with our Iranian correspondent, Nazila Fati, and other people in Iran looking at exactly what he said. The assertion was that by mistranslating what he said, by insisting that he said that Iran wanted to see Israel wiped off the map, that this was leading to misinterpretation of Iranian intentions and then to bad policy. The second part we can talk about. The first part, I wrote a story that appeared in yesterday's New York Times, which laid out the reasons that should be wiped off the map is as accurate a translation as we can get.
Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, that is apparently, given the limitations of metaphor, what he said.
Right. I mean, you know, we don't need to go through the entire philology, but in brief, it's that the Ayatollah Khomeini had said something like that in the early days of the revolution. It became a kind of slogan that you see on written on missiles at military parades in Tehran fairly often. In English, Israel should be wiped off the map, and so on. And what happened is that when President Ahmadinejad spoke last October, he quoted Khomeini. He actually slightly misquoted him. And if you look at what Ahmadinejad said, it looks like he said something slightly more passive. But his own office on his own website has translated as wipe away. All the translators in Tehran did so at that time. And I think that the clear intention was that. Now, what does that mean? That's a separate question.
Okay. Getting back to what he said, though, mm-hmm. he does not say, or what he doesn't say, the one word he does not say is Israel.
That's true. Although Israel is written fairly often on these posters and on these missiles, but it's true that that the president of Iran today talks about the occupying regime of over Jerusalem, and that is part of the dispute. That is, there are those who argue that what he's really saying is that Israel should disappear in the same way that the Soviet Union disappeared, in the same way that the Shah's regime disappeared. He's not calling for a military action against the Jewish state. But the other point of view, which to me is persuasive, is, again, not that he's calling for military action, but his refusal to say the word Israel is not because he wants to distinguish between the regime and the state. It's because he has such contempt for the state that he won't even say its name, as has been quite common in the Middle East for 50 years among many people.
And one other factor is that he has raised doubts, at least in his mind, about the Holocaust.
That's right. He continues to. In fact, he was interviewed by a German magazine only about a week ago, and it was a fascinating interview in which the correspondents are saying, but you must understand, the evidence is just overwhelming. And he said, no, there are two points of view. There are those who argue that the Jews were killed, and then there are those who argue that they weren't killed. And I think that the reason you're not looking at the second one is because you're under the sway of the Zionists and the Americans, and nobody is willing to look at the truth. And, you know, on this point, the evidence is so overwhelming that his refusal to sort of face facts and to deny the Holocaust, which of course is one of the justifications for Israel's existence, does make people worry, in addition to the fact that Iran has historically and quite actively supported groups that carry out suicide bombings against Israel.
All right. Can you stay with us?
Certainly.
All right. Ethan Bronner, Deputy Foreign Editor for The New York Times, with us by phone from New York. Trita Parsi, who is with us here in Studio 3A. Also, Joe Cirincione here with us in Studio 3A. More of your calls when we come back from the break. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. We'll also go to the Talk of the Nation opinion page, our regular Monday feature. Frida Gidis says the days of European workers taking month-long vacations will soon be a thing of the past. If you have questions about why that's happening, why Europe may start looking more like America, join us, 800-989-8255, or email us talk@npr.org. Back after the break, it's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In a few minutes, the opinion page and an argument that the good life is losing out to globalization in Europe. If you've worked in Europe or with Europeans or have questions about why this is happening, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. But first, bringing Iran to the table on its nuclear ambitions, our guests are Joe Cirincione, who's Senior Vice President for National Security and International Affairs at the Center for American Progress, Trita Parsi, who's author of the upcoming book, Treacherous Triangle, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the United States, and Ethan Bronner, Deputy Foreign Editor for The New York Times. And let's get another caller on the line. Catherine calling us from Portland, Oregon.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Basically, the United States, it seems, is by not taking the unilateral military plans off the table and the threats of potential nuclear first strike against Iran, a non-nuclear nation, it seems that it's elevating the risk and desire for Iran to want nuclear weapons to protect themselves. Could somebody speak to why the U.S. continues, or is this just a ruse so that these talks can't succeed, so that the administration can invade?
Mm-hmm. Joe Cirincione.
Let me start. I think the administration is split on this issue. So you can't think of it as there being sort of one coherent administration position. There are some in the administration who want to take Iran off the table, that for them the point isn't to stop the Iranian nuclear program, it's to overthrow the Iranian regime, to continue the process of regime transformation that they believe was started with the war in Iraq. Currently, those people are in the minority, and the pragmatists, sort of led by Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, have pointed out to the president that policy has been failing and that what he needs to do is open up a negotiating channel to see if they can negotiate it here. I think, quite frankly, this struggle is still unresolved. The hardliners are willing to go along with it in the short run. They may believe that the Iranians will never actually negotiate and the president will turn back to military options come the fall or spring, so that's why they don't want to take it off the table completely.
Mm-hmm. All right. Catherine, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And I wanted to get back to the question of Iran's intentions before we leave this. That obviously a question about American intentions, and perhaps they're equally murky. But Ethan Bronner, you were talking before the break about the doubts raised by the President Ahmadinejad's statements about Israel, about the Holocaust. But that does then ultimately get down to the question of what does Iran want to do, and what is the best policy to counter it?
Yes, and here I'm afraid I'm going to have to be far less definitive than I was on what he actually said, the Persian that he used. I think that we just don't know. First of all, what Joe said about the United States administration being split is about times 10 in the case of Iran. Iran is a country with really a wide range of power centers, and they are often in competition with one another, and they are each equally murky to us in any case. So I think it's very difficult to know what Iran wants. I don't think that we can take from anything that the president of Iran has said a desire to go to war with Israel. But it is not clear to me that he would oppose someone else going to war with Israel.
Let's bring Trita Parsi into this conversation.
Well, part of the thing, there's many things that President Ahmadinejad wanted to do. One of it was to make sure that there was a lot of talk shows in the United States about this, because what we are doing right now is that we're pondering what is the other side thinking. The president wanted to make sure that he was throwing balls at the United States so that Iran could be in a greater control of the unfolding of events instead of having to suffer the fate of Iraq, in which the United States was clearly in control of the unfolding of events. The other thing that's very important for the Iranians is to try to drag Israel into this equation, to make sure that Iran's nuclear issue is not spoken about and not discussed in isolation from Israel. Not only Israel's nuclear arsenal, but Israel in general. Because the more aggressive Iran's rhetoric becomes against Israel, the more difficult it will be for Arab states in the region that are U.S. allies to take a strong public position in favor of the American position, because then they will come across in their domestic political context as if they're siding with Israel against another right now quite popular Islamic state, which is Iran.
This is a useful point that Rita is making, Neil. And in fact, today on the wires, there is a poll showing that the inhabitants of several neighboring countries of Iran, I think they're Pakistan, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia, a majority of those polled said that they are more sympathetic to an Iranian nuclear weapon than to the American efforts to stop it.
You see, so while we see Ahmadinejad, as rightly, I think, as a dangerous demagogue, his message is resonating in other parts of the world, even among states that see themselves as rivals to the Iranians. So he was very well received at the Non-Aligned Movement Conference just 2 weeks ago. This is most of the countries in the developing world. He got a vote of confidence at a Muslim conference just 4 weeks ago. It'll be very interesting to see how he's received in China this week.
Ethan Bronner, one final question. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says Iran has weeks rather than months to come up with a formal response. How do we measure that?
You mean how do we measure her statement that they have only weeks to come up? I mean, this has been an American effort for more than a year now to try to get closure on what the Americans view as a need to go to the Security Council and get sanctions imposed if, in fact, they don't stop what the United States considers to be their nuclear program aimed at building nuclear weapons. I mean, I think that part of what she's doing is also pressuring her allies in addition to pressuring Iran itself.
Thanks very much, all three of you. I appreciate your time. Ethan Bronner, who's a deputy foreign editor for the New York Times, joining us by phone from New York. Appreciate your time today.
My pleasure.
And we also spoke with Trita Parsi, who's here with us in Studio 3A. And he is author of the upcoming Treacherous Triangle, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the United States. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you so much.
And Joe Cirincione, we got your title right. Finally, Senior Vice President for National Security and International Affairs at the Center for American Progress. Good to talk to you, Joe.
It's always a pleasure, Neil.
The opinion page coming up next.